Nature schools are on the rise here in Australia and around the world. And I'm not just talking about forest schools like us here at Wildlings. I'm talking about nature schools, the ones that have to follow the Australian curriculum, but are also prioritising getting children outside. So today I'd like to introduce you to Coorabook Nature School in Western Australia. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we're recording today, the Kabi Kabi and Gubbi Gubbi people. I would like to recognise the continued connection to the land and waters of this beautiful place we call home. I also recognise Aboriginal people as the original custodians of this land and acknowledge that they have never ceded sovereignty. I'd like to pay my respects to all Gubbi Gubbi elders, ancestors and emerging elders and any First Nations people listening today.
Welcome to Raising Wildlings, a podcast about parenting, alternative education and stepping into the wilderness, however that looks, with your family.
Each week we'll be interviewing experts that truly inspire us to answer your parenting and education questions. We'll also be sharing stories from some incredible families that took the leap and are taking the road less travelled.
We're your hosts, Vicky and Nikki from Wildlings Forest School. Pop in your headphones, settle in, and join us on this next adventure.
It's the Raising Wildlings podcast. You're with me here today, Vicky Oliver, and it's been a while. Today on the podcast, I have the principal of Coorabook Nature School in Western Australia to tell us all about how their school is embedding nature play and all of the wonderful benefits of getting kids outside alongside the Australian curriculum. And we are always so inspired by communities who have acknowledged that children need and want to be outside, and that's where they learn best, and that we are taking on that holistic perspective of a child's education. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Joanna Griffith. Thank you so much for joining us today, Joanna, on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. We're all so grateful to have people interested in what we're doing.
It is so interesting what you're doing. Do you want to first tell me what land you're on at the moment? I always like to ask that question first.
So we're on a very special place, actually. It's meeting grounds between the Bibbulmun and the Menang people of the Noongar Nation.
Yeah, wow. So that's so cool. I had a geography lesson today myself, looking exactly where you are. So you're right down the bottom of Western Australia, which is really cool. It looks like you're surrounded by some really beautiful landscapes. I'm going to backtrack first and ask you to tell me a little bit about how the school came together. Help me pronounce it because I want to make sure that that's accurate. And then I'll ask you a little bit about your own journey there.
Yeah, well, our school started actually as a playgroup in the early 90s in someone's lounge room and actually at a little community called the Wallery, which is a very sustainable community. They have lots of amazing educators. There was Bruce Anthony and Reggie Pippin and Sarah Posey. So just some really inspiring educators who people just wanted to be around. So they would host in their lounge room and outside. And then within the community of the Wallery. And basically the kids would arrive there and parents would see how happy and relaxed they were and how engaged they were with everything that was happening in the world around them. So lots of visiting animals, lots of amazing fruit trees and veggie gardens, and, they back onto the bush there as well. So basically it started in that way, and there was a group of parents that basically said, hey, we want more.
Yeah.
And we've got this to end now. So, it slowly became a little bit bigger. They moved into a heritage building called the Old Post Office, and there it became the Spirit of Play Community School.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just slowly over the years we had waves of parents that wanted it to be extended. So for a while it was up to year one. It was lots very popular in the early years, which is a really common theme across Australia, I think, where people feel very comfortable with the play-based learning, learning in nature in the early years. And as children get that little bit older, parents start to feel a bit more concerned about the academics and, are they getting everything that they need for their learning? Yeah, then we had another wave of parents who were really keen, and it extended to be a primary school from kindy all the way to year six. And we've now had three graduating cohorts of year sixes who have headed off to high school.
Yeah, right. So relatively young, but still been around for quite a while in terms of the full primary school?
No, so it's only three or four years.
So that's amazing. And how did it evolve from being a tiny little community school to then taking on being a nature school?
So nature was always at the core of what we did. And when we first had our constitution, that's really deeply embedded in everything that we are. And that's one of the main reasons that families choose to send their children here. And it's something that, yeah, in some ways we've had to fight to keep that, especially as we've grown to be a bigger primary school. And so when we went through a name change process just over a year ago, our community actually voted to put nature into the title of our school. So now we're Coorabup Nature School, and Coorabup is the local place name for where we are. So Coor is the little brush-tailed wallaby. And so that's the Noongar name that for that animal that used to be very prevalent here. And Abup means place of, so the place of the brush-tailed wallaby.
That's so beautiful. And obviously that Indigenous perspective and that importance of place is really important, because when I went onto your website, you had a lot of Indigenous words alongside English words. How important is language in the school, and how do you embed that?
Well, I think once you're in the outdoors, it's just really natural that that's the language that you're using and learning, because that's the language of the place. And I think, you know, as a community, we're really passionate about reconciliation. Everybody's come from their different journeys. And my own journey, I spent, 4 years out in a little remote Aboriginal community, and that's something that will always stay with me. And I think the more you understand about, the past treatment of Aboriginal people, the more you realise we have to do something as educators to make sure that we're actually making a difference and supporting closing the gap and supporting people to overcome those traumas that they've experienced and to start feeling comfortable and valued about their own culture.
Mm.
So the way that we embed it is as naturally as we can. So we invite elders and Noongar educators to come to our school regularly, and to have them involved, I think, just makes the process really real for the children. I think, for myself going to school, I never met an Aboriginal person until I was in my late teens, I think. Mm. And so for them to be, hearing creation stories and Dreamtime stories and also the real stories, especially in the upper primary years, someone's personal story about, how they've disconnected from their culture at times and reconnected again because of the hurt that they had felt in the past and, fears of racism and things like that. Mm. So we find it so, so important and so valuable. Lots of singing of Noongar songs. Elders coming to visit and Noongar educators regularly. And that's always so much fun for the kids because, that's when learning is at its best. Yeah, so we've got, this amazing man that we work with. His name's Larry Blight. He's a Menang man from Albany, and he comes across and he brings all his amazing pets, little reptiles and snakes and bobtailed lizards. And so for the children, that's always their favourite days.
I think that's so beautiful because with Indigenous culture, there's so much to share. It's not just one thing. It's so that, art and music and dancing and animals and language and there's just always something new that we can be connecting with and learning about and helping, as you say, like helping revive that within the community as well, because I love seeing Indigenous educators or just anyone in the community who's just passionate about sharing their knowledge and their culture. It's infectious, and I think that it's, like as you say, it's such a deep form of learning, and I love the fact that your school has really made that, like it was straight away, it was like, well, obviously the name of your school indicates that you have that connection, but then you could see that embedded through the website that it, you've taken that one step further, which I think is so important for the children. Tell me about the grounds of the school that you're on as well.
It's amazing. It's so beautiful. So I just arrived here 2 years ago, and to be honest, I didn't really know much about the school before then, but the opportunity came up and I thought, oh, Denmark, that would be a great place to live. So arriving here, we're surrounded by Karri Forest. We're just across the road from the Coorabup River, so the Denmark River. We're just by the mouth of the inlet. We have, you know, it's a short bus trip down to a range of different beaches that, you know, if you flew overseas and landed there, you'd think this was the best holiday ever. So Denmark is just a beautiful place. And so, yeah, literally nestled in amongst the karri trees.
That's amazing.
Then within the ground, we have an interesting little arrangement at the moment with the Shire. So we're on Shire land and just have slowly built as the school has grown. And we're now at a place where we're growing bigger than we can handle in the space that we have. And we have a little shared lease area as well that actually I'm not sure if you know from the eastern states, but there's a really long walking trail from Perth down to Albany. It's called the Bibbulmun Track.
Right.
So we actually back onto the Bibbulmun Track where we are. So walk to Perth if you ever wanted to.
that would be an adventure.
We share this little area that we call the seasonal space, and we have one day a week that's an outdoor program. We call it the walk program. Sometimes it's a bike about, sometimes it's a bus about, and it's really about connecting with nature and what's happening in our land right here with us. So this morning I was outside watching a galah come in and out of a tree hollow while I was eating more tea with the kindy kids. So you know, so much of our science curriculum is around making observations of the seasonal changes and the world around us, and what better way to do it than literally make those observations rather than videos or reading things in textbooks.
Yeah, absolutely.
So our children are very, very lucky.
Yeah, they are, and this is my wish that more children get this opportunity. Do you find that the you said is it council land that you're on?
Yes.
Yeah. So are they very receptive in their on board with everything that you're doing and it's easy to work alongside them?
Yeah, for the most part, it's fantastic. I mean, I think in any small town there's differences of opinion, but majority of people are really excited that the land's being used and, that there's a diverse range of educational opportunities within the town.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool because sometimes that can be a challenge for people is, you know, finding land and then slowly educating people about the use of the land and how we are working in and around and with it. So it's great to hear good, happy stories or generally positive stories about working with council and finding those opportunities for children.
Yeah, part of our walkabout program, we actually leave the school grounds and go into little areas. So there's one particular area that it's just a very short walk from the school. It's within the karri forest. And the children have named it Sparksville, and it's a beautiful little clearing that actually used to be a dumping ground basically in a long time ago, and it's quite weedy, so we don't feel bad about going to that space and disturbing kind of the landscape that's there, but it really is quite natural. So people are really supportive of it, and I think that's one of the great things about Denmark is that people who live here tend to be very connected with nature. Particularly families, that's exactly what they want for their children. They want them to be in the bush and making those connections and, falling in love with nature.
Yeah, I love that you've got a space, and I think that that's important too, so to find spaces where children can actually interact with nature without fear of ruining it and making too much impact and damage, because I think we need to strike that balance. Some places, yes, we need to be very mindful of our impact, and they can be very sensitive areas. It's so nice to find spaces where they can really be in it and interact with it and maybe make it a bit messy and leave a bit of a mark there.
Yeah.
And it's not going, it was a space that was neglected by people in the past anyway.
Yeah, and I think, that's another exciting thing is to be part of that regeneration where, we've worked alongside the Shire actually to regenerate some of the areas around here. So there's an old creek bed that is quite, it was quite ugly and just stormwater drain really is what it looked like. And over the years, we've worked really closely with the Shire to actually regenerate that, and it's this beautiful bushy land now that we get, really amazing diversity of insects and frogs. I think frogs are probably the hot favourite for the kids.
That's so cool.
And so to have that, it's a seasonal creek as well, so the kids actually see the changes of that over the year. And there's just amazing learning that comes from that, let alone lots of fun.
Yeah, absolutely, so much fun. And I think people forget that should be, it's such an intrinsic motivator for children, is just experience joy and have fun. And then we can, you know, use that opportunity to inspire new learning opportunities as well. That's so great. And what other, do you connect with other nature sort of schools or alternative schools in Australia or in Western Australia? Is that something that you guys have done or have observed what other people are doing? Or are you sort of gone, you know, we already know what we're doing, or we're just going to take on the trajectory of what our community is asking for?
Yeah, I think we try and work as much as we can with other schools and other organisations. So we've actually just had Educated by Nature come and spend a week with us. I'm not sure if you know them.
Yeah, Daniel and, yeah,
and Trudy. Yes. Yep. So I actually used to work with them at Bowl Park Community School before they set up Educated by Nature. So keeping those connections is so important. And I think sometimes you feel like you're working in this little bubble and, you know, you're working so hard at what you're doing, and it's really hard to improve what you're doing because it's unique.
Yes.
And so we're constantly looking at ways of getting better at what we're doing. And I suppose as a school that's growing, you know, we've got new staff coming most years at the moment. So how do we, yeah, we have to think really carefully about how we teach those staff and you know, do a really good induction process so that the way that our school wants to be operating, it continues to do so.
So you, with your staff, are you, is there any specific requirements, or like, what does it look like? Are they just primary school teachers who are in love with nature, or is it just like general staff and then you have to sort of take them through your philosophy?
Yeah, well, it's recruiting is such a tricky thing. Mm. And I think, you know, especially now that we have that name Kurrabup Nature School, when people are applying for the position, we tend to have people that really want to work within nature. So we're attracting people who are passionate about it to start with. Sometimes the challenge is that people haven't had that experience in the past. Mm. The other thing that we do is inquiry-based learning, which is a really child-centered way of teaching, you know, the whole curriculum.
Yeah.
And so finding people that fit within that philosophies, it can be really challenging, especially in a small town. Mm. Housing is a really big issue here at the moment. We've had people apply for positions and not be able to find a house to be able to move.
Oh.
I think local people tend to be fairly settled in their jobs as well. So, yeah, we've got some amazing staff, and I think, you know, the number one thing that we look for is for people who are open to learning and open to collaborating. And really interested. And so maybe it's like a personal hobby or something to go camping or to, we've got a couple of teachers who have actually environmental science backgrounds or permaculture backgrounds. And, you know, the skills that they can bring in are just, yeah, so special and unique.
And so do you find that as a challenge as a leader then too, to have to mold and take those people through that journey? Because I find that sometimes is a little bit challenging as well. You know, we've got a really strong idea of what we do in our programs, and then you've got people who think they know what it is that the philosophy is about, but then when they actually experience it on the ground and are interacting with children, there's a disconnect and a big gap, and it can be very challenging to try and show people kindly in a very holistic way what it is that we're trying to achieve. Do you find that challenging as well?
Yeah, and I think that's probably why we really target those people that we feel are really open to learning. Mm. Because I've worked in lots of different schools and I've never seen anything like this. It's very unique and, you know, I guess it's place-based. And I think, yeah, for myself personally, I'm a fairly new leader, so I'm really learning as I go, but I think, you know, the biggest learning, I think, is that nothing happens quickly.
Yeah.
If we think of learning in general, it's not always a fast process, and there's, you know, a real depth to what we do, and you can't just pick that up by reading a book or by, you know, spending a day on a walkabout with someone else showing you the ropes. It's something that develops over time, and I think respecting that is really important.
That's really a really great observation, and I think really important as a leader to know that. I think that it can take a while to come to that conclusion about how long it takes, and we can be impatient, and I think that that's a really great perspective to take on things. It's the same with children, and I was having a conversation with someone earlier about just how quickly the curriculum moves and the fact that children don't get that time to sit and have that deep thought or that deep flow or just taking an idea and being able to have time to sit with it, because oftentimes in schools it's we're doing this now but we don't have time to stay here and we've got to keep moving on. So it's really nice, I'm sure, for the children at your school to be able to have that time.
I think that actually, you know, because technically we have, it's a five-day school week and we have one day where we're outdoors and curriculum is embedded into what's happening on that day, but it looks so different.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of play and slow time and, you know, sitting by the fire and cooking and talking and really working on those skills that we know are needed for the 21st century, like collaboration and teamwork and research and being part of your community and feeling that sense of belonging and, you know, all those amazing skills that are actually in the curriculum but can be very often overlooked because they're not assessed.
Yes.
And they're not, there's no requirement to report on them. So I actually think, you know, when you look at brain science and how children learn, it's actually really important that they have that slow time as well. And to go actually really deep into something means that they're going to retain it.
Exactly.
And so rushing through things, you know, today we're learning this, tomorrow we're learning this, or next hour we're learning this. No, put your pencils down, stop what you're doing because we're moving on to the next thing. It's actually not the best way for people to learn, let alone children to learn.
Yeah, you're spot on. Do you get a lot of time with the children as well, that, because you're the principal? Are you able to balance that time that you need to do the administrative things and then spending time with the kids?
Something I'm still figuring out how to balance it well. So, I know all the children really well. I know their families well, and that's really important to me. You know, when you're having challenging conversations or there's concerns about someone, you know, not progressing academically or whatever's happening. I pop in and out of classes and in and out of walkabout days and moments. So it's a constant struggle, I think, as a principal or a leader.
Yeah.
Right balance, because sometimes I feel like the more time you put in the administrative duties, the more actually there is.
Work begets work.
Yes. So sometimes, yeah, it's just so important to take a step back and, you know, I really try and I learned this beautiful phrase they talk about being off the dance floor and onto the balcony and sort of being able to see over whatever's happening. So here we talk about it as being the wildlich or the eagle. So, you know, being able to soar above and see what's happening, really take that really big picture view to make sure things are tracking in the right way.
Yeah. And I think that's, that shift into those leadership positions as well does mean that you do get taken away from the thing that you probably got into it for in the first place. Like I find myself less and less in the forest, but I know that the purpose of me being in that leadership position is so that we can move that forward. Like you say, you're growing so much, which is so exciting, and someone needs to be there that has that, you know, that is that bridge between the way that the school has to run and those connections and that community. So I think that you must be doing an amazing job, because people wouldn't want to be coming to your school if you weren't. So I think that that's such an important thing to know for your community. And it's so great to see these sorts of schools popping up in small regional areas as well, because sometimes we think that they pop up in areas that have a high population and there's more of a chance of it succeeding and getting that support. Do you get a lot of support and funding from the government, or is that a struggle and something that you have to reach out to community to help you with?
So we're just funded as any independent school is funded. So we do have school fees, which we try and keep as low as possible, especially in this day and age. And then we receive state funding and federal funding, just the same as any independent school.
Yeah.
Fundraising, we try and keep it really, you know, we've got like a parent committee at the moment, and they're called the FUN Fundraising Committee. So we try and keep it really about building community. I think, you know, the funding is difficult at times, but, you know, once you've got your head around how it works exactly, I feel like it works.
Yeah, that's great. I think a lot of people like want to hear that. We're trying to eliminate as many barriers as we can so that people can move forward with innovative ideas in education, because it's so desperately needed and children really thrive. I can see them thriving. Do you have like a favorite moment of something that you've observed with children at this school that you may not have seen in other places that you've taught in before?
My absolute favorite thing is a project that our year 3-4 class undertook 2 years ago, actually. And it was an inquiry that focused on the inquiry question was, how might we protect and restore our local forests?
Mm-hmm.
And it stemmed from the children, you know, seeing a photo of a quokka actually in the bush nearby, and kids didn't realise that there were quokkas around this area.
Oh, cool.
And then they started to realise, hey, you know, we've really got to look after our forest, and it's obviously something that we talk about a lot, caring for Budja, caring for country. And this was just before the WA state government made the announcement that they were going to end native forest logging. So the children were involved in this project. You know, they submitted applications to the government to let them know this is our perspective, this is our opinion. They made little stop motion animation videos about, you know, trying to publicize that they're concerned about their local forest. And then literally, I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks later, the state government made that announcement. So they all thought, oh, we did it.
Oh, so beautiful.
Very empowered year three and four students.
Yeah, and that's like sort of experiences that children need, is that empowerment. And I think that there is a lack of adults trusting and giving children the opportunity to feel that power of the fact that they make a difference, and that even though they're children, they still are an important part of our world and they're our future, and we need to be listening to their voices as well.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we talk about innovative education when we talk about schools like ours, but everything we do is actually based on current research about how children learn.
Yep.
Think about learning outcomes and health and wellbeing outcomes. Being in nature is one of the best things for us. So I like to move away from that word innovative, even though at times it is, and just say, well, actually, this is what we know to be is best practice.
Yeah.
And we're still figuring out the exact details of how to go about it and what it looks like. I really feel like it's evidence-based, and we need to really focus in on that. So yeah, all of our policies, you know, we always consult with, we're supported by the Association of Independent Schools, WA. So we're always consulting with experts there to develop our policies. And sometimes it's new, like especially, you know, thinking about the risk-benefit assessments that we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be challenging because we do more risky things with our children than you do at a regular school. But all our parents are really on board and aware that there is risk involved with, you know, going on more excursions to the beach and swimming. Mm. And it's just about us making sure that we've covered all our bases to make sure the kids are as safe as they can be. But actually also coming with that mindset that, you know, climbing a tree or tripping over on rocks, yes, you'll end up with some scratches and, you know, maybe even a broken arm, but that's actually not the risk that we want to be protecting our kids from. The really big risk that we want our kids to know about is, you know, what happens when they're a teenager and making choices about getting into a car with a drunk driver. So actually all those little steps of practicing, feeling that nervousness in your stomach and
Richard sister, 100% agree.
Yeah, it's so important for kids to actually experience that and know that the decisions that they make actually will have consequences for them. And so, yeah, we have a really big focus through the Walkabout program. Before we start any activity, you know, if we're whittling with knives, for example, we'll sit down and have a conversation. Okay, hey, kids, what are the risks involved in this? And as teachers, obviously, we've got a fair idea of what is coming up and what the risks will be and make sure that they don't miss any, and have a first aid kit there and have ice and bandages and things in case something does happen. But it's,
yeah,
we actually try and put a lot of the responsibility back on the children, because we're trying to build those neural pathways for them to make those choices for themselves and to work out, well, actually, if I'm going to walk into the bush by myself, what do I need to do to be safe?
Absolutely. I think you absolutely nailed it. It is one of my like foundational ideas that I just think that so many people are so worried about our children and being around risk, but they actually are not thinking about the unseen risks that will come up in the future. Like you say, it's not as visible as a scraped knee or a broken arm. They seem very visible and worrying in the moment, but we don't see the future risks that are happening by making children avoid difficult and challenging situations. And schools, I see them trying so hard to come up with some way of doing that, but you can't replicate children being actually able to make those decisions for themselves and actually having something risky in their surroundings or what they're doing for them to make that decision. It's not the same as a hypothetical situation. So I think it's so important that they get those opportunities.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, Joanna, it's been so lovely to talk to you today. Thank you so much for joining us. And as we wrap up, I just have a few little questions for you. We always like to ask our guests about a book that they recommend that our listeners might want to know about, or just your favourite book, because everyone loves a good book recommendation.
You know, we've just been working with Daniel and Trudy from Educated by Nature, and they've just shown us this absolute game-changing book for us. So for those people who are maybe a little bit more advanced in their planning and their journey about nature education, it's called The Coyote's Guide to Nature. I wish I had it in front of me to get the title exactly right.
It's a mentoring book, isn't it, about role of adults with children? Yeah. Is that
perhaps of it? Within there, there's a whole bunch of frameworks which we're just sort of starting to trial to implement, you know, which really support us with our planning and, you know, the energy levels that the children need and the energy levels that we need to bring as well as educators share those roles. But lots of amazing games, nature connection games as well.
Amazing. I have heard about that book and it's on my list of things. And I think our staff are really crying for that next step as well, because I think we can be well versed on how to watch children whittle or, you know, observe, but there is a little bit more of a gap in what is our role? That's a really common question. We had a SFA meeting last night, Australian Forest School Association, and one of the provocations is like, what is our role? And constantly reflecting on that, like, what is our role as educators? You know, what part do we play in the connection that we have with children, and the fact that we are the most adults that will often a lot of children will see during the week. And that's a really something that we have to take very seriously and need to reflect on often. So that's probably really, I'm going to dive into that one next, actually. So thank you for that recommendation.
I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. And where do you go if you've had like a big week, hard week? What do you do to reset or unwind?
I have two young children, so heading to the beach with them is my favorite thing. Or if I need some solo time, which it definitely happens. Beautiful place just not far from my house. It's called Poison Point, and it's a little lookout over part of the inlet and sunset, sunrise. It's just the most amazing place with the wind. It kind of feels like it's blowing all your worries away.
Oh, beautiful. And a big one to finish, but if you could just change one thing about the education system, what would that be?
I think right now my head has really been in the space of inclusion, you know, children with learning difficulties and, you know, who've experienced trauma, and that comes out as, you know, big behaviours at school. So I would love to change the way that funding works and have those children really a lot more heavily supported.
Yeah, I think you're right. It definitely is an area that is coming up for me as well. Inclusion, especially when in an outdoor environment, can look very different too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited to see where your school is heading in the future. If anyone is down in the WA region, we'll be sending them your way. And where can people find out more about your school?
We've got our beautiful website, so it's www.kwurrabup, which is K-W, hardest word to spell out loud, kwurrabup.wa.edu.au.
Excellent. And I'm sure people will be so fascinated to see how you're growing and what your school provides for children. So thank you so much for all of the brilliant work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Really feel honoured to be invited to speak with you. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Well, there are very lucky children over in Western Australia being able to spend so much of their time outside. Sounds like a beautiful little school. If you'd like to find out more, make sure you jump onto their website, have a look at what they're doing. And maybe this will inspire you to get something started for your children or the children that you teach, or as an educator, having a think about ways in which you can implement nature play or forest schooling programs in your setting. That's one of our specialties. We'd love to help you out. If you feel like you need some support in this area, make sure you reach out to us at hello@wildlingsforestschool.com. We would be more than happy to talk to you about ways in which you can do that for your community. It's really nice to be back on the podcast with you guys today. I can't wait to bring more fabulous interviews in the future. But until next time, stay wild.